Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 5th of January, recording at 9:07 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, as always, I start with a quick review of the last week. And my goodness, what a week it was. Well, stock markets roared in like lions, at least for one day, and then turned into, well, lambs, very frightened lambs, and not least here today. And government bonds were quiet, but ended on a soft note. The U.S. dollar really did the opposite of what stock markets did. It started the week weekly, and then roared over the last 3 days upwards. And also we saw precious metals, which had started the week on quite a firm footing, head south in a big way following the weakness of the dollar. I beg your pardon, the strength of the dollar. So precious metals heading south following the strength of the dollar. Most other commodities, industrial metals and most commodities, followed that same trend, least of all nickel. And oil, last but not least, was absolutely hammered and closed, but managed to close with minor gains in here today, 56.17 on the NYMEX crude as I speak. That's 56.17 after a early in the day low at 54.90. Okay, so what do we make of it all? Well, first, you can expect to read a fair amount in the financial press over the next few days about the people will be fretting over the first week of January barometer. More importantly, my own view is that stock markets have commenced another reaction. I mentioned this, I think, in yesterday's or the day before's audio, this possibility. And I think this will be a somewhat larger version of the reaction that most stock markets, but not all, experienced in early December. And I had been talking about seeing a reaction in December because of the considerable strength that we had seen. I maintain that this will probably not turn into a full-blown stock market correction. And just to put that into perspective, I certainly regarded the May-June correction, as full-blown, very much a medium-term correction. So I don't think we're going to see that this time, but certainly we have seen lots of evidence that a number of stock markets have reached accelerated peaks. I'm thinking principally of the Asian markets, and then Japan, which hadn't accelerated, but it had a nice march back up towards some resistance near the 17,500 level on the Nikkei, and that got a downward dynamic in here today. We've had some failed breakouts on the upside in here today. So again, I wouldn't be surprised to see, I expect to see, a somewhat larger reaction and consolidation phase than we saw than we saw in December. Not the end of the world by any means, but in case I'm underestimating the risk, I think I would not put any new money in the market until we see some evidence that prices are steadying here once again. And on a longer-term basis, a more medium to longer term basis, I should say, I really don't think we have a serious risk, partly because this is the third year of the U.S. presidential election cycle, partly because I don't think we're going to get much further on the upside in terms of interest rates, although sentiment has temporarily swung against interest rate cuts in the U.S., given some modestly strong economic data, including some employment figures here today. Bill Gross is a notable exception, and I'm about to post his report, or I will after I complete the audio if you haven't already seen it. He's looking for 100 basis points off the federal funds rate this year, and that would surprise me, frankly. I think the Fed will probably want to do as little as possible overall, and it'll just and it probably I don't it probably doesn't know what it wants to do at this stage. It's just going to monitor the data like everyone else. But when push comes to shove, the Fed and all other central banks in this environment in particular will fear recession and deflationary pressures more than they will fear inflation. You wouldn't necessarily get that impression listening to the utterances, but remember, the central banks are very much in the business of managing inflationary expectations. And so they will talk tough. They don't want to see upward pressure on wages, but that is going to occur at some stage, if not sooner, later. Okay. In as far as the big themes are concerned, here for stock markets, if we don't get well, I finished what I was saying. I was saying if I'm right in the forecast that we don't have a bear market risk, and in the short term that we don't even have a medium-term correction risk, then I think that what we could expect is a somewhat larger reaction in the emerging markets than in the developed country markets. That's because the emerging markets are higher beta, of course, but that's not a great deal to worry about, and both those reactions might create might well create probably will create buying opportunities. The big risk in the emerging markets is of course the next bear market, because again, due to their beta, they will fall further than others. Now, I again emphasize, I do not see that bear market on the horizon, and not least because we have not had a melt up in government bond yields. The oil price certainly remains at low levels, which are reasonably favorable, quite favorable, I would say, for the global economy overall. And clearly, we do not have a currency crisis as far as the US dollar is concerned, or any other currency, really. The countries that have felt that they had a bit of a currency crisis, well, France, for instance, when the euro was quite strong and it looked as if it might break upwards against the US dollar once again. So the themes, now let me go on to move on to the themes. My favorite theme here overall remains emerging Asia. I think that's got the growth potential, and that's really going to increasingly become Asia. It will increasingly become the world's growth engine, led by China and India, of course. There are laggards in there. Thailand, very much out of favor at the moment. Great valuations, but we'll have to be patient. With those valuations, I can be patient with my holdings in Thailand, although I'm obviously not happy about the governance. China, great story. I think it's run ahead of itself here in the short term. I would not be surprised to see a further reaction in that market. We've only seen a couple of days. And I wouldn't be at all surprised to see some of these China funds come down, including the one I like so much, it's done so well, the Atlantis China Fortune Fund. But I wouldn't think for a moment of selling out my long position in that fund and trying to, well, that would involve some costs. Of course, I think I paid a 2%. I know I paid a 2% spread when I went into that fund. I wouldn't want to come out on that basis, and I'm not trying to trade that sort of thing. I'll worry about trading my leveraged positions overall. I'm happy to ride out a reaction and even medium-term corrections in most of my investments. I don't want to ride out a bear market in my equity investments. So again, I like this Asian theme very much. India remains my favorite stock market for the long term, although I wouldn't be putting any more money into it today because it's done so well. Ditto China. A decent reaction, say, will create the next buying opportunity, and a decent reaction would include a medium-term correction. And I've already said I'm on record as saying that I wouldn't be at all surprised if we didn't see a medium-term correction at some stage this year, but I would be surprised if it occurred here in the first quarter. I don't see enough trigger factors for that, and I don't see that happening at a fairly bullish period seasonally. Now, anything can happen in markets, as we know, but again, I've pretty well stated it. I don't see that actually happening. I think maybe investors are going through a nervous period here, and temporarily we may have seen most of that liquidity that had been on the sidelines committed to markets, thus setting them up for a bit of a reaction. That's the way I see it overall. The resources theme is under pressure here right now, and I think that that's not going to change while the oil price is very much on the defensive. But again, remember the global economy remains synchronized in a period of economic expansion, led again by China and India, and we're still seeing the rapid growth in the development world, rising consumption of those resources, rising populations. And that leads me on to what you've heard many times, at least veteran subscribers have, this commodity supercycle theory, which I have really been an advocate of and a believer in over the last 5 years or so. But it's always going to be volatile. And that's the nature of markets, and not least commodities, which tend to be extremely volatile. So I expect that volatility, and that volatility is mostly on the downside right now, and that also is creating some other buying opportunities. If I were to put new money in the markets here today, I would go right against all the conventional thinking and pick up some of the resources stocks. But I'm reasonably relaxed in terms of what I've got, and the resources stocks, again, they're out of favor. That means that they can go a bit lower here in this environment. But there is a point at which I would find the whole sector irresistible. I haven't quite reached that mindset yet, but that's the way I would be thinking, in other words. Okay, looking at government bond yields, Bill Gross is reasonably bullish of the bonds. I would be surprised to see a significant rally in the bonds. I just don't think we're going to get the type of weak economic and low inflation conditions that would warrant that. So I'm not really interested in the long-dated government bond sector. I have been on record since June 2003 as saying that I felt a secular bear market had commenced. And a secular bear market commences when the old secular bull market, which ran for about 18 years, depending on which government bond market you look at, had was it was ending. So I believe we are in the early years of a long-term bear market in government bonds, during which we will see yields gradually rise, not in any sort of linear fashion, but in rolling waves. And yields are at levels today that I think are really unsustainable. And if it were not for the fact that a lot of that we have some imbalances in the global system, for instance, with central banks such as China and Japan and, well, India, many central banks holding very large quantities of US dollars, and they're really more concerned with keeping their economies growing, preventing their currencies from overheating, and preventing their currencies from overheating, then they're more interested in that than they are in finding the optimal investment for those US dollars. So, in other words, they're going to keep the money in US dollars, in US, mostly in US government bonds of various denominations. And I think that has helped to keep the US government bond yields a lot lower than would otherwise be the case. What's a lot lower? Well, maybe 100 basis points at least lower than would otherwise be the case. So it's kind of an artificial influence. It's not the normal investment demand looking for the better returns, taking in inflation considerations, is the point I'm trying to make. So I don't like this government bond sector, as I've said many times before. As far as the US dollar is concerned, the price action that we have seen is more often than not of a ranging nature. And I've mentioned this on many occasions. I expect lots and lots of ranging. That's the norm with currencies. And then you get these, what are usually these short, sharp moves. We live in an environment when no country wants a strong currency. We live entirely in a fiat currency world, only paper money. And these currencies, like all fiat currencies throughout human history, have not held their purchasing power. So there are no hard currencies in this environment. There are just currencies that are getting a bit of a momentum play on the upside, and then the central bank that regulates that currency will become very concerned, because political leaders in the business community in that country will become very concerned, exporters principally, and so we'll get some jawboning and some intervention and so on to prevent that currency from rising, and we get a sharp reaction. The momentum all goes in the opposite direction. So we don't get big moves the way we do in stock markets and the way we do in commodities. We get this choppy ranging action more often than not, and the punctuated from time to time by sharp but generally short-lived moves. Now, this is taking place within an overall trend that I think is still likely to be soft for the US dollar, but not hugely so. For instance, to put numbers on that, the US dollar index, which has rallied very smartly, as you know, in the last 3 days, but it's currently at 84.65. I think it will get down at some point, and I wouldn't be that surprised to see it this year. I wouldn't be surprised to see it get down to the 80, 78 region. And certainly, if Bill Gross is right in talking about the federal funds rate coming down 100 points, I think that would most likely happen. And I think that's one reason why we probably won't get 100 points off the federal funds rate. But I don't want to draw this audio out too long here, and by repeating points that I've already made. So I expect, again, this ranging environment, but with the dollar to eventually move somewhat lower. The trouble is, there's so many bears in the dollar that when we get a clear consensus that it's going lower, we see a sharp rally. And that's what's happened in the last 3 days. And watch the sentiment. If you're interested in currencies or dealing in currencies, watch the sentiment. And you can pick that up from Bloomberg TV, CNBC. When the strategists who come on every day to talk stop talking about the dollar weakening and say that they actually think the dollar is going to be rallying for a bit longer than most people are expecting, that will tell you that a lot of those short positions in the greenback have been covered and actually replaced with some long positions for the dollar. I think we've seen markets go a long way in that direction here in terms of trading money over the last 3 days. And then at that point, the dollar will be vulnerable once again, and you will see that when the dollar eventually gets a downward dynamic. Right now, all it's had is it had that sharp upward dynamic that I pointed out earlier in the week, and the dollar's been rallying ever since. But I don't think it can sustain more than a short-term rally. But I've never been of the dollar is going to collapse school, although that is suspected by many, many people. What I do feel is to say there are no hard currencies and all will lose purchasing power, which leads me on to gold. And gold's taken a beating in here this week, down to the $600 level nearly. Got down to 602.46, currently 607.50 in after hours trading. So that will play on nerves for quite a few people. I think this is an interesting and promising level. I think this is an accumulation range. Mind you, I was saying that 2 or 3 days ago, while warning that we could easily see volatility, further volatility in this market. So I can't say that gold or any other precious metal has bottomed during this downward correction, but I do feel that they are all in accumulation ranges, and I feel that they are all in long-term secular bear markets, and the activity that we have been seeing since the middle of June last year has been one really of a gradual support. It's been a gradual support building process, and we have had the volatility during that period where you get the sharp rallies and then they're mostly retraced, but we see rising lows on the charts for most of these precious metals, which I think supports my gradual support building a hypothesis. The dollar remains the biggest influence. As I've said before, we won't get a meaningful move on the upside in gold and the others, I don't feel. I'll put it this way, meaningful, what's meaningful? We won't get a really significant move. In other words, we won't get the highs, last year's highs, taken out. And I do expect that to happen, and I wouldn't be at all surprised if it happened this year. I think there's a very good chance that we'll see the last year's highs taken out this year by precious metals, and if not this year, I would say it's nearly a shoe-in, it's virtually a shoe-in for 2008. But in the short term, I do not see that actually happening, and where we will see the evidence is when we get gold breaking through some of those minor resistance points that I mentioned. Oh, I think it was just before, maybe it was just after Christmas when I did a review and posted quite a few charts of gold in other currencies and cited levels that I felt had needed to be taken out to indicate that gold was mounting another sustained run on the upside. And when we do get that evidence, I wouldn't be surprised, well, I would expect silver to outperform gold on the upside. Remember, that silver is just high beta gold. And so it rises faster in the upward moves and falls faster in the downward moves. And I wouldn't be surprised to see platinum and even sleepy palladium, which has got a lot of support underneath it, actually outperform gold on the upside. And as I say, I expect gold to do extremely well. But, you know, people worry about the central bank sales largely from European central banks and so on. And that's central bank sales of gold, that is. Okay. As far as the agricultural commodities are concerned, this is a hugely volatile sector. It's the most volatile sector. I should really take the industrial metals first. Copper. Let me deal with this one again, because copper is the one that had the big toppy-looking chart formation and the big downside risk. and it has, as you know, broken down and has been moving steadily lower. There's a big short position in copper. I posted a report last month that had a graphic, very good graphic, showing the move from speculative longs to speculative shorts in the copper market. Those copper shorts will obviously try to push it down as much as they can. We want to watch for an upward dynamic, which I think is likely to occur in the next month or two. Watch for an upward dynamic in copper. That could be quite an important turning point for the metal. And people have assumed that all the other metals would do the same thing that copper is doing. They have very different chart patterns overall. So I am not of that view. I maintain that this is a secular bear market, a bull market, a secular, no Freudian slip there, a secular bull market, or that was a Freudian slip. I repeat myself, a secular bull market for the industrial metals. And that these will remain volatile, but we will see those overall upward trends extended on the rising demand meets supply inelasticity theme. Of course, you get periods where demand falls off a bit, supply increases a bit, and you get the and you get the setbacks. But overall, I think that the demand curve for these industrial metals is likely to rise, short of a global the next global recession, which I don't see anytime soon, but the demand will continue to rise pretty well on an annual basis, and that supply will struggle to keep up with that rising demand. From time to time, it'll catch up. We'll get sharp reactions in the metals, but then that supply will drop off, and there'll be a strike or something like that, and demand will continue to pick up, making it ever more difficult for the producers to provide the supply. And there aren't that many substitutes either. Oil prices. This is different. I said that I felt that a support building process was underway for crude oil, and I wouldn't change my mind unless I saw that $55 level broken and with the break maintained. Now that hasn't happened yet, but we have certainly seen a severe test of that level, and oil is still hovering just above it. So my support building hypothesis is obviously subject to question, and I repeat the point that oil needs an upward dynamic, or well, it can recover without an upward dynamic, but it needs to push back up above that $60 level, get back up into the low 60s to really provide some technical support for my overall support building bottoming out process within its long-term upward trend. I think that the same factors that I've mentioned for industrial metals apply to the oil price overall. But in talking about it in recent weeks, I've been saying that the support building process might well be lengthy, and I see no reason to change that to change that view. But I think we're much I'm put it this way, my view is that the next significant move in the price of oil will be on the upside. Now, moving on to the agricultural commodities, last but not least, they are hugely volatile. Again, demand has been rising very, very sharply. The key variable, however, is always supply. Well, I should say demand rising very steadily. The key variable is always supply. And we have seen a rundown in stocks, particularly among the grain and bean complex. So I think prices for a lot of these agricultural commodities are now more susceptible to supply problems than they were in the past. There isn't that big cushion of reserves for most commodities. And therefore, while expecting lots and lots of volatility, I think we will see some fairly significant upward moves in this sector over the next few years. Historically, many of these prices are still reasonably low. And I think that's pretty much it. So I'll just say have a splendid and relaxing weekend. Well, I for one could do with a little less drama next week, but the markets will give us whatever they're going to give us. Meanwhile, all the very best to all of you.